Best Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, here with my co-host and awesome business partner, Al McDonald. Al, you excited to be here today? I know I am.
Well, of course. It's always exciting to be here and talk to some great guests, and today is no exception. So I'm looking forward to jumping into it.
Agreed. Well, today we're excited to be joined by Karis Goodall, the Chief Operating Officer at Vetster. Vetster is revolutionizing pet care by connecting millions of pets and their owners with top-rated digital-first veterinary solutions through their innovative platform. And we're going to find out a ton more about that and a ton more about Karis. Karis, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I'm so excited.
Well, I've got to know you a little bit now because we've had a call before this. And of course, before that, I was on your LinkedIn and looking at your profile and all these kind of good things. Love technology because you can do these types of things. But you have such an interesting background. Like, you've transitioned across such diverse industries: aerospace, healthcare, telecom. Now we're talking about telemedicine for pets. Can you maybe talk about, as a successful person, what are some of those consistent principles or even skills that you've carried with you to every role to help you succeed?
Such a great question. I don't know what success actually means anymore, I think. I think it's more about being brave and just putting your hand up and saying, I'll go try that. I've been really lucky throughout to work in such amazing, diverse industries, from B2B to enterprise solutions to government. And I think the biggest thing is really understanding your customer audience. It's given me such an appreciation for people around the world, things that people are going through, building an empathy throughout my career. And more important, that finding those little threads that build upon a career. We have such an idea when we start out that you have this ladder and it's linear and it's going to propel you from one level to another, and you have to pick this path when you're 19, usually, you know. And I think one of the things, because I have moved around quite a bit in different roles, the natural ability to just be curious and a little bit brave, or nuts, to say, yes, I'll try that, has been a really formative experience for me over the last 25 years.
So it's interesting you use the word brave, because that came up in our first episode this morning. And it's not a term I've heard much of prior to this. Is there any examples that you can share with us there, maybe that opportunity where you had that, you know, that chance to be brave and how it kind of paid off for you?
So many. I think my whole career has been it. Not because I've ever felt brave in the moment. In the moment, I'm usually terrified to take the risk, but it always pays out. And I think part of that is because I have a core value of being a lifelong learner. And if you're curious about work, if you're curious about your own life and curious about your own capabilities, the moments of opportunity that are terrifying sometimes and where you need a little bit of gumption, once you step through the door, that's where the bravery happens. And that's where you start to build your confidence. Because as long as you're willing to learn, you can do that. I think why we're talking about bravery so much more now in terms of our careers is we've seen such an evolution of uncertainty, partly due to COVID. And so coming out of COVID, I think there's a lot of foundational work that still needs repairing. And so taking risk in one's career, I think, is amplified now in terms of what that risk feels like. And so when we talk about bravery, I think now it's coupled with resiliency and building that sort of internal muscle to say, it's okay. I'm going to take this risk and I'm going to learn what's on the other side of it. And some of it's going to work and some of it isn't, but that's okay. And I think we've learned now in more of a transient work environment where things are changing, we're remote, we're back into the office, the world is changing, AI is now coming. The idea of risk is a little bit more of a norm in your career now, because you aren't being coached in the same way that you were 10 years ago. You're not in an office, you know, having your manager sit beside you every day and teach you how to do the job. There's so much more that you're independently learning. And I think we forget, particularly as we get a little more gray as we go in life.
Mature.
Mature. Yeah, great. We forget that. We forget that we have to do that as well. And I see that with a lot of senior people is they themselves forget to be brave. They forget to step into the learning and take those risks. And so I'd like to think that that is one of the things that is really exciting now about work, but it certainly is something that you have to hone.
I love a lot of the things you've said already. We could have a conversation based on what you've just talked about. In your first answer, you know, you talked about, I don't really know what success is anymore. I think that's great, right? Because there's always been this thought, success means money, power, fame. Mm. That's about it, right? But no, I think you're right that it's very different now. And the other thing that you said that I really keyed into was this idea that learning and progress is not linear. It's a journey. It's very much fraught with obstacles and curves and roadblocks along the way. So I love that you've talked about both those things already. I have a question for you specifically about Vetster. Can you talk about how you approach building an intentional company culture? You've already talked about values. So what key elements do you believe are essential for creating that environment where people can thrive?
Yeah, an intentional culture to me is so important, especially in the startup environment, but certainly for any company or new team. I learned this when I worked with Mike Cervinas at Kobo and League. He was very purposeful about building a company culture, and he did it at the executive level prior to the company even getting going. And what I learned from that process was, I think so many people think that culture will naturally appear and that it will all of a sudden become this amorphous blob that exists within your business and you hope that it's good. And what I've learned is that culture by design is really part of your strategy. And I think people dismiss that quite a bit. And so it's a lesson that I learned early on, and it's something that I've adopted throughout my career now. And certainly at Vetster, we've done the same thing. Very early on, we took on defining what our values and what we wanted our culture to be. And it dictates who we hire. How are they going to show up? What are our expectations of them? It helps people to make decisions around our kinds of partners, how we're going to treat our customers. Who are we in our business ethics? When I think about things like COVID, you know, happening, a company who has a win at all costs culture, right? If that's one of your values, win at all costs or pace, the decisions that you might have made in COVID would be very different than a company that says our people are first. And what are the decisions that you would have made during those two times when COVID happens and you have to make some very real financial decisions that likely affected your headcount in your company? When I was at Innerspace, this was something that I was unbelievably proud of. We did people analytics indoors. So you can imagine when COVID happened, there were no people indoors to do analytics about. And it was really devastating for the business. We were a small company. We had just raised some money with BDC's Women in Tech. And we were sitting there thinking, none of our clients have people to measure. How are we going to grow our company? How are we going to build our pipeline? How are we going to save our people? And the natural thing that happened at that time was everyone said, go down to bare bones, put everyone on furlough. And we saw this happen across the industry. And instead, because our values were around our people, we said, we're not going to do that. We're going to do something completely different. We're going to do whatever we can to keep our entire staff, which we did. And we're going to rethink what we offer to the market so that we can grow our business. And even though there is nobody inside buildings, we're going to focus on tech and getting the infrastructure into these companies and provide a different value proposition of speed to return to office. And I'm so proud because we kept everybody on staff. We actually grew our business during that time. And I don't think we would have done that had that not been a really fundamental core value for us that we were willing to stick to. I think the other piece of building culture by design is people love to throw out their values when they're inconvenient. And that to me was an example where we went to our board and said, we are not going to do the obvious thing for OpEx. we are going to do the thing that is harder because it aligns to our values. And while I'm not at Innerspace anymore, the entire original team is still there and now they're thriving and growing. And so that for me is a major career milestone. And I'm so proud of James Wu and Matt McGilvery, the co-founders there that I got to work with. It was an incredible experience. And to this day is one of the things that I am most proud of.
Well, I love that you brought up, it's easy to stick to your values when things are easy, but you know, the proof comes when it's tough. Can you share some of those key values that your company might have?
Yeah. So at Vetster, we're really proud of our inclusion, diversity. I spend a lot of time in pay equity and total compensation. We are certainly all about pace and ambition. So we are a global platform. We have designed Vetster not just to be a great Canadian startup, but we want to be a global business. And that is why we expanded very quickly into the US and the UK and continue to support veterinarians around the world. We also believe that our values around empathy and customer obsession. For us, our customers are not only pet owners and their pets, but it's also veterinarians who, as an industry, are really struggling. There's a massive shortage around the world of veterinarians providing care to our animals. And as everybody knows, during COVID, everyone went and got a pet. So now 70% of homes have animals, and these beings rely on us. And so we are absolutely obsessed, not just about the pets, which we all love, and not just about the pet owners, but also the people who are treating and caring for them. And so if you come to Vetster, you will see it everywhere, not only from the 15 dogs that may be roaming around our office on any given day, but you'll see it through every conversation and just how much our team cares. And we're really committed.
Perfect. I love it. I love hearing that you got dogs wandering around the office. I'm a dog person.
Yes, every day.
Yeah, I think a visit, an in-person visit, is going to be warranted as we follow up on this episode. Karis, I love what I'm hearing about culture by design, I think is what you referred to it as. And again, I love doing these podcasts because I always learn something. And I'm thinking back to 2005 when me, Al, and Joe, our other business partner, launched our company. We worked really hard to do up our vision and our values, and we stuck it up on the wall, and then we forgot about it for many, many years.
I think we stuck it in a drawer, actually. I don't even think it made it to the wall.
It might have fallen off the wall and ended up in the drawer. And then until recently, where we redefined it, we actually don't call it our values anymore. We call it our guiding principles. And I think we've done a very good job of living those and having our team embrace those. But from your perspective, because you've lived through this, what do you recommend to companies so that they don't do the first mistake that we made, say, hey, we've got these, but now I forget them? Like, how do you make sure it becomes just part of who the company is and who everyone coming to work is going to live those values?
That's such a great question, because I think that's what so many companies do. They do it as an exercise because they think that they have to.
Yeah, check, right?
It's on a poster, it's in a drawer. Good luck if it's made it into your employee handbook and you sort of, it collects dust. And I think even we have been guilty of that, you know, full transparency, it ebbs and flows. And sometimes you think, oh, we got to get back to that. A big part of what guides our programming is that we build them around our values. So everything from how we create a job description to what we put in our employee handbook, to the programs we create, to the reward systems that we have within our business, they all align to the values. And we're constantly examining our values to say, where do we think we are in relation to each one of them? Are we doing enough? Have we maybe slacked off a little bit here? Has the world changed and we actually need to look at this value a little bit differently with a more modern lens? What does that mean to our business today? It also means we have to challenge people where we think that doesn't align to our values. Let's really examine why. For example, we love our team. We hold our team, you know, to the highest. Our people are our biggest asset. So I typically hate that phrase because they are people, not things. But how they are treated is really important to me, how they treat each other. And so as an example, if you are a partner that doesn't treat our team well, we're not going to be partners for very long. And that can be a really difficult decision for companies to make. And so I think those are the things you really do have to live by them. We are only just 4 years later getting to a place where we are bringing the creative life to our mission, vision, values. So we actually don't have them on the walls, proverbially, but they're embedded in everything we do. We have reward systems. We have a program, it's a plugin for Slack I recommend for everyone called Tacos. And you could just give people tacos, but we've based them on our values. And so what people do is they'll give a taco, which can then be redeemed in the future for some kind of gift card or an experience or a coffee with the CEO. But they're all tied to our values. And we ask people to give examples of how that person upheld the values. And it's absolutely amazing. Team unity is one, and that is probably our most popular, where we see people really celebrate how they are being respected by each other and how they're being supported by their teammate. It's wonderful to see. It gives me as a leader and in people ops, the ability to see what people are resonating with as well. And then we build programs around them, which is really exciting.
Robin, I think I see tacos in our future.
Yeah, I was going to say, again, you know, and people might get sick of hearing me say this, but the reason why we call this podcast Success Leaves Clues is we were hoping we could tease out clues from successful people that other people might be listening to and think, wow, that's a great idea. I like that. Or even better, hey, I'm going to reach out to Karis because I heard you on the podcast and can I pick your brain for a sec? And most people that I've encountered are very open and willing to help about that. But I wanted to touch on a point that you made that I think is very, very important. And I think you and I would align on this. Early on in our business, we had a client and we treat clients as partners. We become partner and that's the best type of relationship we can have. But they didn't treat one of our staff very well. And I don't have to get into detail. It turned out to be pretty nasty. And financially, we were just starting our company and financially it was a tough move, but I gave them 30 days notice to find another broker. And to this day, that person is still with us and she lives our values as well. And I think that just spoke to, in the early days of, these are our culture, these are the people who we are, this is what is important to us. And I think that's been part of our success along the way. So I'm glad you brought that up because that trust and mutual respect is one of our guiding principles. And if it's not there, whether you're a client, a partner, or a team member, it's just not going to work out for us, right? So I'm glad you touched on that.
That's an amazing story. It's so important when you're thinking about who your business is and the integrity that you're going to have when you look back. And those are the moments, you know, again, Al, you brought it up. We can talk about money as success, power as success. But at the end of the day, I want to leave my career and look back and say, I helped somebody buy their first house. Mm-hmm. I helped somebody come to Canada and build a life. I protected somebody in a moment where they were vulnerable. I stood by doing what was right, not what was easy. That's the legacy, you know, that I'll be the most proud of. And hopefully we all have success along the way. And I think it'll come from those things.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to jump a little bit back to your overall career, because when we first chatted, I think you would be, and correct me if I'm wrong, a self-described generalist in the HR field. You know, if someone is coming up early on in their career, what advice would you give to them about how they can leverage that versatility to become a really effective leader, kind of many different areas?
Yeah, I often say I'm the unlikely COO. If you looked at my resume, you would never hire me. If I had to send somebody a resume today, I would not get a call back. They would think that I was, you know, I'd lost the plot. I was really lucky in the early days of my career. I love science. I was in public relations. I was working with very technical companies at the first tech PR agency here in Canada called High Road Communications. And so we were working with, you know, Terry Matthews companies in Ottawa, semiconductors, telecom, in the sort of post-Nortel heydays. And what that did for me was just let me be curious. I, as a PR person, had an open door. I had the skeleton key to everybody's department. I could walk in and say, I want to tell stories about what you do. I'm curious about the business. Let me learn. And I spent 10 years in that field. And so I went from agency to the military aerospace. I got to work for NASA, the CSA. I learned so many things about these different industries before I moved into marketing and then before I moved into operations. But the common thread was just being curious and learning what other people were doing. And the biggest thing was connecting dots. And if I look at the best operators, some of them have come through very operational business intelligence, project management roles. I come from a communications and marketing background, but I think the common thread is you know how to put the dots together. And so when I think of somebody who's starting their career, I love a good specialist. I need a lot of specialists around me because I'm a generalist. But I think there are a lot of people now, particularly with the way the market is and the way it's evolving, especially if you're in tech where new AI is coming and we don't really know what the implication is going to be for anybody's role yet. And so having a little bit more curiosity and being more flexible to what that linear path you thought you might want has, I think, is incredibly important. So I always say, go spend time with other departments, with other teams, be curious, ask people to job shadow them. I used to do this all the time. Can I just spend a day with you? I just want to work beside you. And just the osmosis of learning what people were doing, what conversations they were having, can inform you so much and shape your career. And I think there's many, many ways to do it. You don't have to go back to school. You don't have to put your career on pause. Take the leap. The worst thing that will happen is you'll find out, ooh, that's a step that I don't like. Oh, now you've got more information. You make another move. I think we are hesitant to feel like if you land somewhere and you don't like it, that's failure. I don't think that's failure at all. That's just another step in your journey. And I think you are always in the right place at the right time where you need to be. You just need to be curious to open your ears and say, what am I learning in this moment?
It's interesting because I had a conversation with someone recently, and it was a fairly large organization, still private, privately held. And his father owned the business. And he was talking to me about, because my dad was in our business as well. And what a cool thing that is. Well, most of the time it's cool. Sometimes there's, you know, you butt heads, but it's an experience, especially with my dad being gone now, that I do value. But he was saying, his dad made a point of saying, if you're going to take over my role one day, you are going to learn from the ground up. And he did every single role in that company. And he says, looking back now, that's the biggest favor he ever did for me, because I can put myself in other people's shoes and understand from their perspective when they come to me with an issue, a problem, a challenge. So I think there's a lot of value in what you shared for those people who are looking to stay maybe a little more agile and stay in the generalist route. There's a lot of pathways for you going forward. And especially if you can, like you said, we don't know what AI means, but I would hope younger people coming into that role would be saying, hey, I'm going to lean into that because I know that's going to be part of my future going forward. So I think there's a lot of value in your answer.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also, you know, you hear the joke, oh, I became a senior person. I grew my career and I looked around and I went, wow, nobody else knows what they're doing either. And that's true. And it's true because we're building new companies. Technology is changing. There is always something new that we have to go figure out. That is always going to be true. And I think that's where you do rely on your specialists. I was having a conversation with one of my teammates yesterday, and he was thinking about how does he grow his career. And I said, listen, I don't hire anyone who knows what I know, because I already know what I know. I look for people who think differently, know different things. And why? Not because I need to rely on them, which I absolutely do, but because I also want to learn from them. Show me what you know. Open my eyes to new things. I know what I know, and I'll teach you the things that I know. But also, as I get older, it is harder to stay in touch with what is resonating with younger generations. I remember a pivotal moment in marketing where Snapchat came along. I'm really going to date myself now, but Snapchat came along. And I remember saying to a friend in marketing, I said, I think this is the hard left that I need to take. I don't think I can do that. I need to know Snapchat exists, but I can't be on it. And I think it's the same now, is you have new generations with new attitudes, particularly after COVID, but you also have new technologies. And we can't expect to know everything. But you need to be curious enough to understand what people are going through so that a program that works for me versus a program that works for someone else isn't going to be the same thing. This is why at Vetster, we created pet health benefits for companies, because if you have children, you really care about the dental coverage for orthodontics and braces. But if you're Gen Z, younger millennial, you don't have children. You are more likely to have an animal. And so how do we create a pet program for you that makes sense? I can't necessarily say that that resonates for everybody, but that's what's important, is learning what everybody else needs. And I can't pretend that my reality is theirs.
I love everything you said. And I'll go back a little bit, because you talked about the concept of failure and how it doesn't, we really should embrace failure more often. And failing doesn't mean you're a failure at the end of the day. So I think it's great that you brought that up. And I love the approach that you also said about, I don't want to hire people that know what I already know, because I already know that. Can you talk about the concept of living in friction? when it comes to leading change. So explain what that means to you and how embracing friction helps leaders drive meaningful transformation.
Yeah, this one is, I think, complex, but also quite simple. And I will say, when I think about living in friction, I think this is universal, but there is a very specific sort of women in tech angle that I think about in terms of living in friction. Anytime change management is happening, anytime you're delivering news that you know isn't going to go over well, we're living in that friction. We're living in the response that somebody is going to give to you that says, I don't like what you're telling me. And that is an emotional burden for any leader, any people manager, even anyone who doesn't manage people, but is bringing a new idea forward. If it's not well received, you're living in that friction. But I think in particular for women, I think in particular for women in tech, there is an undercurrent where we live in the friction that we are expected to be palatable. We are expected to, in some ways, be subservient to the voice in the room. People are not used to yet women having equal tone to the delivery that men have traditionally had. And we know that. The studies say, you know, a man and a woman can say the same thing and the woman will be perceived as aggressive or bossy. I mean, the studies are there. And so I think there's an added element for women in general when they're thinking about building their careers and when they're thinking about becoming senior leaders in particular that requires them to manage the living in friction. And again, universally applied, but I think women in general do have to face it a little bit more and really think about, do they have the resilience for it? Because it can be quite exhausting to feel that. If you are remotely empathetic, it's 10x, you know, because you want people to like you and you want people to understand and you want to understand where they're coming from. And that can very quickly, as a leader, get you sort of spun up and stressed out. And so practicing how you live in friction and what is real versus what is in your head and what might be that imposter syndrome, you have to really have a check and balance there. Being in operations, I introduce process. I introduce growth. I hold people accountable to business plans. Those are three major areas of friction in a business. I'd like to think I handle it as well as possible, but when you're telling somebody no, or I need you to be accountable, or here's what we have to do, and I appreciate your wonderful idea, but we're not going to do that today. Those are all areas of friction that you hold. And that friction isn't just professional, it's emotional. It is emotional. It's that burden we carry when we come home. And so when I talk about living in friction, it's a resiliency that you have to practice. You have to have tools in your personal and professional life to put that down. I think one of those major tools is, regardless of your level, you need allyship and you need to have a friend at the office. And they're not the same. Having people around you who are supportive of you, who are fixing your crown when you're not in the room, who are having your back, who are aligned with you is very important. And that's true for everyone. But you also need to have friends at work. And that is very difficult. The more senior you become, it can be very isolating. And so you need to have that friend at work where you can bring that down, live in friction, who will also tell you the truth. Is this real or is this in your head? You know, are you perceiving friction? Is this real? How is this resonating? I think the other thing that's so important for people now is we've learned through this transient nature of work, you have to have really healthy boundaries around your work. I work a lot. I work a lot. And anyone would tell you that they would laugh if I said, oh, I have boundaries around work. They would laugh because I work long hours. But I have very good boundaries around my time, my family, my friends, and where I spend that. And work does not get to enter into that space. So despite I work long hours and I really love what I do, I have very clear boundaries. And that lets me reset from the friction. It lets me center myself on who I am and where my values are. And so that's what I mean when we talk about living in friction. It's building that muscle, building that skill set, but it has to be an accepted part of the role. If you fight that friction every day, you're going to really struggle in what your job is asking you to do.
Wow. That was a lot.
Long-winded.
Some really good stuff in there. No, it wasn't long-winded. It was actually a really, really good answer that I'm just, Robin will tell you, I take a while to process stuff and I always have to go back and reflect on some things. You said one thing in there though, and it was actually at the beginning, and I want to unpack, I want to dive a little deeper. You talked about this idea that if women speak in a certain way, they come across as, you know, aggressive or bossy or whatever the case may be. Whereas if a man speaks in the exact same way, oh, he's showing leadership, he's showing authority, whatever. How do we get by that? How do we get past that?
It is a really good question. From my own experience, I think I played that game largely because I worked in very male-dominated industries. Forget tech. Mm-hmm. I worked with NASA. I worked with the military. I was often the only woman in the room. And in order to find that success, I emulated the behaviors that I saw.
Right.
And not because of the gender norms, right? Not because of any of that, but because the models, the role models I had of what success looked like just happened to be men, because that was the environment I was in. And so I modeled that behavior. When I moved more into other businesses in consumer tech, I had more women around me. But what I learned, I fell on my face a few times, candidly, was that I was still emulating that behavior. And now I had women around me and they weren't responding particularly well to me. I wasn't building my peer group. I wasn't building friendships. I was still emulating a behavior that didn't resonate. It wasn't how I would chat with my female friends and colleagues. And so I had to learn very quickly, particularly once I hit that director level, as I was becoming a little bit more senior, I had to step back and take a look at, is this how I want to operate? And what parts of having success and being able to climb the proverbial corporate ladder make sense for me? But what are the pieces where I'm actually upholding a behavior that I'm trying to change from within as well? What are those things? And I think that middle management level is really where the work has to happen. And I encourage both men, but in particular women, to examine where they are. Are you upholding behaviors? Are you emulating behaviors that you actually don't like? Those are the things that you want to change. And it was a bit of an aha moment to say, wait a minute, the things that got me success are actually the things that within the system we want to change. And so some of those things are being able to advocate for people in the room, making sure that closed door meetings have the right mix of people in the room, making sure that most of those closed door meetings actually have the door open, really re-examining where social time was happening. You know, are you going to the bar in a closed group and creating a perception that other people aren't allowed to be there, right? 20 years ago, we would have called it the proverbial golf course. Now it might be going out for drinks or doing a different activity with people. What does that actually look like? At Vetster, I do monthly, bi-monthly groups, specifically just with women to open the door to say, I want to understand what you're going through now. And I want to make sure that you know that my door is open, that if you're ever experiencing challenges, I'm here for you. And I think creating those safe spaces are important. But on the flip side, we also have a program that we do called Up Teaming, and that's cross-functional. And that's where we also bring up a lot of these conversations so that everyone's in the room and we can share those experiences together. In general, we come at it from a very combative place. And this to me is just, we're talking about systems. We're not talking about gender truly. This isn't about men versus women or anyone else. This is about a system that isn't working for anybody. So how do we be inclusive in those conversations? How do we really focus on our empathy for each other? How do we say, I can see your experience and I can understand how I contributed to it, but also how I can support you through it? Or how I can just listen and be present and witness your experience together. And I think that's really important. And there is a place for that in the workplace that can still be professional, that can still be supportive. And I think that's what I've learned along the way, is that it doesn't take a lot. It doesn't take big programs. It doesn't take these big groups that you need to have internally. It can be something as simple as getting together for coffee and sharing those experiences on both sides and making a safe place for conversation.
That is a great answer. And I'm happy I asked the question. And I definitely took to heart a lot of the things that you added in there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Karis, I am a voracious consumer of podcasts. And my wife will tell you, I've often got one earbud in while I'm doing stuff around the house. But I'll pull that earbud out routinely. And I'll, you know, the little back 15 seconds you can do on your phone. I have a feeling people with the answers that you're giving, because they're so in depth, I have a feeling people are going to go, oh, hold on. Let's go. You got to listen to this answer. You know, you got to hear this. I have a feeling a lot of people are going to be doing that. So I'm looking forward to feedback, because there's just so much in those answers that we've been talking about that I think people are really going to have a great time going back and saying, I think you could listen to this a couple of times and still get value out of it. So I think this is going to resonate with a lot of people. We're almost at the point of the episode where Al has his signature question, which I'm always so curious to see how people answer. But before we leave Vetster, from my view, I don't have pets anymore. the day I hope is going to come where I do get that again. The time just hasn't been right just yet. And of course, for me, I've always said it's from your first breath until your last with me. So you have to be committed. And I feel, you know, that's a big responsibility. That's a leap to take. So it's got to be the right time. But just from me, an outsider looking in, I see Vetster doing a lot of cool things, leading the path forward for telemedicine for pets. Where do you, like, what's next? Like, how do you prepare to lead that space going forward? If there's anything you can share with us so that people can continue to watch that journey.
We're really excited. We started specifically in telemedicine. So speaking to a veterinarian on the phone from the comfort of your home. And so I have a cat, she's 17, her name is Orange, and good luck to me getting her into a crate to go to the vet.
Exactly.
And so personally, I'm excited about Vetster because it has solved a great pain point where I can be at home in a relaxed environment speaking to a veterinarian about her care. But we're going so much further than that. Pet owners today don't have access to the care that they need, but in addition, an easy way to manage their pet's health, from microchipping data to licensing to, I just got this animal, what do I do? Is this normal? Oh, itchy, scratchy, smelly things happening. Pet owners want to feel more empowered. And thanks to the digital age, we can do that. On the other side of things, the veterinary industry is in crisis. You know, this is an industry, it's 80% women now. They want more flexibility in their work. They're overloaded and overwhelmed. And so we also want to bring more support to them so that they have more flexibility, more support, and are able to see pet owners in a really great way where they're partnering in care. That's what we're all here for, is ultimately to keep our animals happy and healthy. So we're definitely thinking global. We're thinking more about that convenience, and we're thinking about how we bring that into the digital space, which is very exciting. I'm really proud of the team. They're incredible, and they are obsessed about pets.
I think, like Al said it earlier on the episode, a visit down to your offices to see all these dogs in the office is in our future, hopefully.
We love that.
Al, it is that time, my favorite part of the episode, so I'll let you take it away.
Wonderful. I always look forward to it. All right, here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So as someone who's helped grow and transform various industries across your career, can you talk about what proverbial trees you might be planting? And maybe that's in your career, but maybe that's somewhere in your personal life too.
It's such a great question. A couple things come to mind. The first is, I'd like to think that I am helping women in particular to redefine how they think about being in tech. We know that the numbers in STEM still remain low, but everyone is working in tech now. If you're in HR, you are using tech, you're thinking about tech and how you're going to apply it to the role. If you're in marketing, it really doesn't matter what part of the business you're in, you are now in tech. And if you take that lens to navigate your career and think about the opportunities, I think it can fundamentally transform the opportunities that women have. Related to that, one of the things that I am most passionate about is pay equity. In my course of my career, we know the numbers are still not there. And pay equity just isn't your salary, but it is also total compensation. Women are paid 80 cents on the dollar, less if you're a person of color. Equity, ESOP, all of those things, typically you are getting way less in general. And so one of the things that I'm really proud of at Vetster is that is a huge pillar and focus of mine. I am constantly obsessed over it, the team will tell you, and I'm really proud of that. And the reason I'm proud of that is because the earlier we can do that from day one in your career, we are setting people up for a future of financial success. It cannot come once these people are senior. It can't come when you're a VP. By that time, you're in your 40s and you're already missing out. It needs to happen in your 20s, and you need people at the senior level like myself who are obsessed about it and going to make it happen. And so that's another tree. I think the other thing that was instilled by my dad, he's a doctor. He lives in a small community. He has always served his community. And that is a really big value of mine. I work with RISE, which is an organization that came out of the Rotman School of Business many, many moons ago, but we focus on microloans, mentorship for people with addiction and mental health challenges who want to become entrepreneurs. Volunteering in my community and being able to give back to those who don't have access in traditional sense to become successful is a core value of mine. It's very easy to invest in people who already are successful. That is a very easy thing to do. We see that in our venture capital community all day long. And I think for me, being able to extend that benefit that I've had into areas and people that don't have access to that is critical. And I encourage everybody to do it. You will get 10x back whenever you serve your community than you could ever hope to give.
I love that answer. And you mentioned a couple of things in there that I had not heard of before. So maybe I can pick your brain afterwards a little bit. But again, thanks for sharing that.
Thank you. It's a great question.
For listeners interested in learning more about what you're doing, what's the best way for people to reach out?
LinkedIn, for sure, at Karis Goodall, and always happy to workshop practical ideas and help people along the way and hear from everybody else what they're doing.
Well, thanks for sharing your journey with us. It's been a pleasure. I know our listeners are going to take a lot away from this conversation. Well, that does it for another episode. We really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or by joining the conversation on LinkedIn. I think we saw it pretty clearly today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.